Welcome to the Teach the Geek podcast, where engineer and author Neil Thompson talks with STEM professionals about public speaking, a struggle for many of us. Whether you're a novice public speaker or a proficient one, you can always pick up tips on how to improve. Here's your host, Neil Thompson.
Welcome to another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson. I'm the founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online platform for science and engineering professionals. The first offering of the platform is a public speaking course called Teach the Geek to Speak. To learn more about it, you can go to teachthegeek.com. Again, that is teachthegeek.com. Today, my guest is Dr. Krishana Sankar. And after earning a PhD in physiology, she now works as a science communicator. I'm really interested to learn more about how she came to science communication, her plans on developing from there, and also public speaking, of course. Welcome to Teach the Geek Interviews, Dr. Sankar.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I did a little bit of research on you, and I saw that your undergraduate degree was biological in nature. Where did your interest in biology come from?
Yeah, it was. So I think my interest in science in general came from a really young age, as early as I can remember. I think it was from playing with tadpoles from when I was really young. So I was born and bred in Guyana, which is a country in South America. And going to blackwater creeks and playing with tadpoles, looking at the different flora and fauna around, I found that very interesting. And then also I was interested in astronomy as well. And I've got like a cute little story about that. So our library back home had recently gotten a few astronomy books, and I was so interested in it and wanted to make sure that I was the only one able to check them out, that I would go into the library, read them, and then hide the books so that no one else would get them. And then I'd go back later in the day and then check them out. So yeah, I was just really interested in science overall. Biology, I guess, in particular, my interest continued to grow in biology from a young age as well. And I just ended up more in biology because I was more interested in how the body worked, doing little experiments at home. Actually, some were chemistry in nature, doing little things like having pH kits, like making pH kits at home and pH indicators and building little lung models at home. So yeah, my interest in science and biology started from a really young age, and my parents really encouraged it and fostered it from a really young age.
I commend you for following the biological roadmap, I guess. Because when I was in school, biology is probably one of my least favorite subjects because we had to draw things, and I wasn't a very good drawer. So I used to get really, really crappy grades on it. I was like, what the hell with this shit? I need to do something else. I don't even know why I was in the class. My father said I had to take biology. I was like, all right, I guess biology it is. So, but I didn't follow that up in university. But I saw also that, well, I introduced you as Dr. Krishana Sankar, so you got a PhD. In physiology.
Right.
So what was the motivation for getting a PhD?
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I mentioned, my love of science started from a really young age, and I just continued in sciences for as long as I could remember. I did high school back in Guyana, and then I finished there, and then I moved to Canada with my family. And when I did that, I started undergrad at the University of Toronto. And in my mind, it was always science. Like, I would always be in science. And from my undergrad, I actually started working in research labs. So from my first year summer, I started working in research labs. My first research lab was actually an insect physiology lab. So I was working with these insects about this size, and they were called kissing bugs. And they're native to Brazil. And so there were nasty little bugs. And my project for that was, actually, I started out in the lab as a tech, like a technician type student, where I was given different responsibilities, like cleaning up in the lab and feeding the insects and taking care of things in general. And then, of course, very quickly after that, got my own project where I started to learn a lot of microscopy, which was very interesting to me. So I have super fine motor skills. So if ever anyone needs someone looking through a microscope and dissecting very tiny things, I'm really good at that. So I started in that sort of lab with a project there, and it was biological in nature, trying to understand how the brains of these insects worked if they were exposed to certain pesticides. So that was one project, and after then I wanted to continue. I was really interested. Like I said, I've just always had a passion and a love for science and working with my hands, working in a lab. I loved it so much, but I wanted to move on from insects as models in science to potentially human samples. So I actually, if I think about it, my journey was starting at insects. Then I went to my next lab was rodents. So I started with mice. So I worked in a mouse stem cell lab, trying to understand how a certain protein, if it was its presence or absence, affected how blood vessels develop. And so that was another really interesting stint. And then from there, I moved on to another stem cell lab where I was working with human samples. And that got me really excited. And within that lab, they were studying many different disease areas. So they were looking at blood type diseases, blood vessel related diseases, and diabetes. And so it was really interesting to get exposed to all of these different types of disease areas, and also use stem cells as a way to treat those types of diseases. So after that, all of that was in my undergrad. I was just like, what do I want to do next? So for me, the natural progression was to continue doing research. And to continue doing research meant graduate school. And I wanted to continue doing it for as long as I could. So naturally, we start off with master's degrees, at least in Canada. And then if you want to continue, you can either graduate with your master's or you can transfer to a PhD program. And so I decided to transfer to the PhD program. So my lab that I did my PhD in was more concerned with diabetes related research. And then it was also using biology and engineering in order to tackle some of the questions related to diabetes.
How long were you in graduate school for?
So I was in grad school for a while. It's been a while, at least 6 years in grad school. And so that was quite a bit of a journey from undergrad to grad, and then taking some time in between to also work in the pharmaceutical industry, which was quite interesting as well. And that's a little bit of a unique story, because typically those of us who go to grad school or do a PhD in what we call a wet lab, so a lab in which you're sitting at the bench and you're actually working with cells and animals, typically it's difficult for those students to get an opportunity to work outside of academia, just for get experience outside of academia. So I was fortunate in that regard to be able to get that sort of experience.
So I'm guessing it's 4 years for undergrad and then 6 years for grad school. So you were in school for a decade?
Yeah, at least. Yeah, for sure.
Jesus Christ. Wow.
Oh yeah, it's not a journey for the faint of heart. I will definitely say that. You've got to really love what you're doing. You've got to love it a lot to keep doing that, right? Like, not everyone can do that. I actually remember once bringing my sister into the lab during the summer just to introduce her to research and see if she would be interested in it, because I was so interested in it. And you know, it wasn't for her. She said, you know, this was just not her thing, and she went to nursing school. So, you know, to each their own.
Well, you're damn right it wasn't her thing. She's not trying to be a professional student, for God's sakes.
Okay, you know what? You know what? Those of us who are professional students, we love it. you've gotta love it to do it.
My God, like you were in there when there. I guess when you started, there was a different prime minister. Then when you finished, it was another prime minister or something.
Like, yeah.
Like, good Lord.
Wow. Yeah, it's a journey. It's a journey.
So eventually, well, from what I understand, a lot of people, when they go that route of being in school for 10 years, after which they have to make a decision. But I guess when they start out grad school, at least as far as I understand, most of them want to stay in academia and become tenure track professors. Was that your goal, or did you always have the plan of doing something else?
So yeah, that's another good question. So actually, I would say my initial goal, probably when I started undergrad, was to do medical school. And I think a lot of students in medicine tend to do that, and not medicine, in biology tend to do that. As well as coming from a Caribbean background, you know, yeah, you're laughing because I guess you know.
No,
right?
I'm still laughing over the 10 years in school. That's what I'm laughing at.
Oh my God, Jesus. No. You gotta get over that. So yeah, I think from undergrad, a lot of students that I met, pretty much, I think 90% of the biology class wanted to go on to medical school. But I think after my introduction to research, I kind of forgot about medical school, and that's where my interest lay. Now I'm blanking. I forgot your initial question as to, and trying to figure out why I went back to. You were asking about my future goals if it was to become a tenured professor. Like I mentioned, initially it was to do medicine, and that changed to research. But I would say during my journey in graduate school, so like you were laughing about the fact that it's so long, you've got enough time to figure out whether or not you want to actually continue to do this or pursue this career path for, you know, X number of years, well, for the rest of your life. Yeah. As much as I loved research, the environment can be very different for each person. Each person's experience will be different depending on the type of school you're at or the immediate environment that you're in. And so for that reason, I did not see myself becoming at least a research professor. I have been thinking about, there's something called teaching stream professors. So instead of having a research lab, you're a professor, but you do teach and you have research in teaching instead of research, like the type of research that I was doing before. During my journey, I decided that becoming a tenure track research professor was not for me. And so that left me in a place of exploration, which is also where my time spent in pharma came from. I was really happy to have had that experience so that I could see what else was out there outside of academia. So yeah, I did not want to pursue tenure track in research, but teaching is a different story. Teaching I enjoy, and also, you know, the science communication like you mentioned, but also I've been able to combine business with my biological background, which I think is a very important thing for a lot of people in sciences to also have and to understand have a little bit of a business background as well.
How have you been able to make that the putting together business and your research work?
Yeah, so once again, I looked, like I mentioned, I had a lot of exploration during my time in school, and so there were a few different clubs on campus that they're dedicated to students who are doing PhDs but do not want to continue on tenure track. And something I should mention as well is that although traditionally doing a PhD would mean that people would want to go down tenure track, that's not the case, you know, for the past many years, just because there's so few jobs. And actually a lot of people coming into the degree now know that they don't want to stay and have a tenure track position. They actually want to go on to do other things that a PhD can also prepare you for. Two main career areas that a lot of PhDs tend to go towards are in industry, or either the pharmaceutical industry or towards consulting. So like healthcare consulting and management consulting. So that's actually what I did. So pharma was one place in which I started to learn a little bit of business background behind the science, although I was in the medical affairs department. And my experience with the on-campus groups that did consulting. Also that consulting group had a mini MBA program, which was really cool. So a lot of science students tended to flock towards that program just so that they can have a little bit of business background to help prepare them for the next steps after their PhD.
Interesting. So where did the whole science communication piece come in? I know you'd said, you know, during your time in grad school, you had a lot of time to figure things out. And yes, six years certainly is a lot of time to figure things out. So where did science communication come in?
So science communication actually was something I was always doing. I just didn't know that there was, I guess, a term for it. So within, while doing a PhD or pretty much, or essentially any job where you are required to communicate what it is you're doing to stakeholders, for example, communication is necessary. And it just so happens that within science, because there was a lot of communicating of our research and our results through either committee meetings or conferences or seminars or talks, that's actually a form of science communication, because essentially what it is communicating your science to an audience. And I started doing that to different audiences. I was actually doing that, I would say, prior to even starting my degree, but of course that ramped up during my degree when I was doing a lot of presentations at conferences, but that's more scientific, that was geared towards the scientific community. But then there was a time during my time of exploration where I was also feeling like there was a disconnect between researchers and people in the community, right? So for example, my colleagues and I, who were doing research that were diabetes based, we did wet lab research, which meant that we were not actually interacting with, for example, people with diabetes in the community. And for me, I started to feel that disconnect, and I needed to feel like there was some sort of connection to what it was that I was doing in the lab to the people who actually have, you know, the disease that I'm working on. And so with that, I actually founded this organization at the university, and a bunch of colleagues and myself got together and we said, you know what, we want to start having events and presentations where we take it and put it out into the public. We let the public know what it is that we're doing at the lab bench, right? Because at the end of the day, taxpayers are the ones who pay the money that are going towards the grants that researchers get. So we felt, you know, it's important to be able to share this with the community. So starting that, you know, started a lot of making a lot of presentations that were accessible and easily understandable by the non-expert public. And then with that, Diabetes Canada, which is a national not-for-profit organization here, we partnered with them, and then then you become a volunteer with them, and I did a lot of speaking engagements for them. And so slowly, starting from my research, I started to do more and more science communication type events where over here in Canada, we've actually got quite a few, especially some geared towards women in STEM, where we speak a lot about our research. And so I've spoken to many different audiences, whether it's kids from as young as I think like grade 3 or grade 5, you know, to high school and adults, speaking, you know, at the library and the community, the local community and stuff like that. So it's been really fun, and science communication was just something I was doing all the time. I just didn't realize that is what I was doing. But it's a young field, and it's now growing and progressing. So there are actually, I would say, maybe more opportunities in the UK and the US, and we're trying to grow that field here in Canada as well.
Wow. You know, I commend you for seeing the need of taking the work that you were doing in the lab and communicating it to the people in the community, because I get the sense that a lot of times people, especially the ones in academia, they kind of get stuck there and they're not really thinking about the application of their work just to the common person. So the fact that you had that foresight, that's kudos to you for that.
Thank you. And you actually raised a really important point. So it is true that tends to happen. And I mean, the type of research that myself and other people, like that I did and other people are doing, the basic science research, it's hard to have that connection, right? From the basic science, the fundamental science, to the science that reaches the patient. And usually the people who are the ones interacting with the patients are the doctors or the researchers who do clinical research, and they're the ones who tend to interact with patients. As a foundational scientist or a basic scientist, it's a little bit different because you're removed. But for me personally, and I know for a few other colleagues as well, we just needed to feel that connection between our research and feeling, you know, there is some kind of impact. What would the impact be that eventually would reach patients?
No, I like the term that you use, time of exploration. I'm going to start using that term too. Because what it means to me is I don't know what the hell I'm going to do next.
But it's true. That's what it is, right?
It sounds a lot nicer the way you put it. Time of exploration. I like it.
Yeah. can use it.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of things that you're working on, Dr. Sankar. There's the science communication piece, you know, combining the business with your research. What would you want your career to look like going down the line? And what challenges do you think you'll face in making that happen?
That's an excellent question, because many of us in my situation, we don't know, right? And so that's where the time of exploration.
Time of exploration, right?
But this is a question that I constantly ask myself, and that's because I don't know. I think I've seen a few of your interviews with your other guests, and everyone sort of seems to have maybe they're currently in a specific career area. But for me, because I have a lot of different interests, sometimes trying to combine them all and figure out what exactly, you know, 5 and 10 years down the road will look like can sometimes be challenging and difficult. But for me, what I can see for myself is having one foot in the door in academia and one foot outside. And I think having being able to do both is what would make me happiest. And I think, like many people, it's the pursuit of happiness within your, you know, career. That is what helps you to figure out what it is you want to do, or makes you stay in what it is that you're doing, right? So I could see myself, for example, you know, having a teaching position in a university, for example, and then having one foot out the door in an industry type position.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times also people kind of just get into these fields and they don't know how to get out of them. But and not only that, they're not really thinking about, you know, what they want, you know, down the line. They're just kind of in there, kind of with their blinders on, just going, doing what they're doing. The fact that, you know, you're trying to build something that's catered to you specifically, again, I commend you for that, because there's a lot of people that they're not even thinking that way.
No, it's true. And what you said, especially about having blinders on and sort of just go, you know, it's like you're just on autopilot, right? And I think that's actually what a lot of graduate students tend to do. I know that's what I did initially. It's just I had blinders on and I knew that I was interested in research. So the next, you know, logical step was to just keep going in research. But then when you know, at the halfway point is when I realized, what am I going to do with my degree? You know, what do I want to do? The obvious next steps were to do a postdoc and then to continue down your track. But I knew that I didn't want to do that. So I had to stop myself from making that obvious next step. Although, you know, doing a postdoc is not a bad thing. That's also more preparation for work outside of academia. But at the same time, I knew I didn't want to become a research professor, right? So that time of exploration did help me to actually know that there were other things that I could do outside. And I was no longer, I no longer felt pigeonholed into doing, you know, just following the path. And I also now felt more at peace with myself, which was a huge thing. And I think that's a huge thing that a lot of people doing a PhD feel, who are not sure where they're going. There's a lot of like depression and very low mental health associated with it, right? Because not knowing what you're going to do next is a huge issue, especially after you've spent all this time of your life studying. And then, you know, eventually we all need to make a living, right? And we need to be able to face that fact of how are we going to do that? You know, are we going to continue down the research path, or are we going to leave? And so, yeah, I had to do that. And a lot of other people are learning that's the road that, you know, they have to take, is to explore. And that's the only way you're going to figure out what you want to do.
For sure. When it comes to public speaking specifically, are there particular topics that you like to speak on?
So for public speaking, yeah, I guess that would be, it goes back to the science communication. So I really do, I have been enjoying speaking about, you know, my research over the years. That has been a lot of fun for me, especially to different audiences. What I do like to do, so I'm a person, I like to continuously challenge myself. So if I'm, you know, if I'm invited to do like a speaking engagement for, say, for example, the scientific community, well, I know, you know, how I'll speak to that audience versus if I'm invited to do one for the non-expert public and the people in the community versus if I'm invited to speak to, you know, five-year-olds about, you know, like, you know, the intricacies of my research, how am I going to do that? So I love being put in that position to have to like constantly flex my muscle, you know, my speaking muscles to specifically target what I'm talking about to different audiences. So that's been, yeah, so talking about my science is one, but then also to, I haven't done this a lot, but something else that I'm passionate about is also talking about the, like the mental health state that I just mentioned, of graduate students, because that's something else I'm passionate about. I myself have gone through difficulty during graduate school. And so having started, this, Slack group that I started a couple of years ago, it has grown so big right now to over 750 people around the world who come for support in virtual, you know, academic writing, but not just support in writing, but then also, you know, support from peers and colleagues, especially going through, you know, when they're going through difficult times. So that's something else that I'm passionate, that I'm very passionate to talk about. Yeah.
Is public speaking something you've always been good at? And if so, if not, what have you done to get better at it?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I guess I would say it probably started from when I was really young. I didn't think about it in that way in terms of public speaking, but back in Guyana, there were you know, different competitions that you could enter. And so one of them was, I think it was like a poetry speaking competition. And so I, like I said, I love to challenge myself. I love to try different things. So I have trained, I trained in dance for over 12 years. So doing poetry speaking was something different and outside of, you know, outside of my comfort zone. And so I wanted to try it and I tried it and I enjoyed it. And then slowly over time, I would find myself enjoying speaking more about what it is I'm doing, probably more than writing about it. So it just kind of came as something natural that I really like to do. And I also got feedback, from several people who said, you know, they loved my presentations, like when I would talk about my research. So it came from there. And I guess I would say I started to pursue it a few years ago when someone reached out to me. They were supposed to do a video for our university talking about research opportunities for undergrads. And that person couldn't do it. So, you know, he referred me. And then from there, I started to pursue it a little bit more. To actually pursue it instead of, you know, just waiting to get invitations, because I found it was something that I was interested in doing.
Do you ever get nervous before giving a presentation? And if so, how do you deal with your nerves?
Yeah, I think so. I do sometimes, yeah, for sure. I would definitely say there's nerves. I don't, and I think it depends on the forum or the medium, you know, through which I'll be doing it. Sometimes, yes, a little bit of nerves. So something that I've recently picked up is to play some music just before, you know, like, you know, probably half an hour or 20 minutes before I have to do my presentation or a talk. I would play some music to sort of just get the juices flowing, just to help me calm down, my favorite music. Right now, during this pandemic, it has been soca, so I've been blasting a lot of soca music. And also, for me, actually, what helps me feel least nervous is when I'm most prepared. So for me, once I feel very prepared, that really helps with my nerves. So, you know, if I need a few bullet points or whatever to go over just before my presentation or my talk, you know, being able to just go through that and have things in my head within, you know, a certain order, just having those points there and knowing and feeling prepared helps me with my nerves.
This has been really interesting learning more about you and where you're headed, Dr. Sankar. Are there any other tips that you could offer for someone who wants to become more effective as a public speaker?
So there was something else that I did that I forgot to mention. So a few years back, I did take a course that was offered through my school that helped with public speaking. So I would say if public speaking is something that anyone wants to do and they want to do it seriously, and you know, we can always be better. We're always constantly learning and improving. I would say, you know, seek out courses. Of course, they don't have to be expensive. If possible, any sort of free resources. I think even places like Coursera has courses on public speaking, I believe. I'm not completely sure. I think something else that's very interesting, I haven't done yet, but I actually do want to do, is like one of these improv classes. So the improvisation classes, I think that really helps in, you know, helping someone to possibly just speak on their feet, being thrown into a situation and just having to, you know, pull a topic from the air and just be able to speak about it. And then also, I know there's Toastmasters as well. I haven't actually gone to one, but I have read and heard that they are very effective and useful. So yeah, those are a couple of tips that I would say to try, you know, if you feel like you want to become a speaker and perhaps improve on your skills, a couple of things that you can do.
Wonderful. How can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, so you can get in touch with me through LinkedIn. I am Krishana Sankar on LinkedIn. I'm also very active on Twitter. And if anyone's on Twitter, you can DM me on Twitter. So my handle on Twitter is @KrishanaSankar on Twitter. And yeah, I think those are probably the two easiest ways to get in touch with me.
Wonderful. Well, everyone, that marks the end of another edition of Teach the Geek Interviews. My name is Neil Thompson, founder of Teach the Geek. It's an online course for, it's an online platform for science engineering professionals. Teach the Geek to Speak is the online public speaking course. And to learn more about it, you can go to teachthegeek.com. Again, that's teachthegeek.com. Perhaps you can check out that course as opposed to the ones that Dr. Sankar suggested on Coursera. What the hell's her problem, right? Anyway, take it easy, guys, and stay safe. Thanks, Dr. Sankar.
Thank you.